Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
On Christmas Day 1991, a young Tasmanian, fueled by righteousness and with a newfound sense of purpose, filed an official complaint to the UN that dictated that the state government of Tasmania were breaching the right of privacy through laws that criminalised homosexual activity between two consenting males. What eventuated was a 9-year campaign aimed at eradicating what was at that time the last sodomy law in Australia, and it was a very long battle. This week, we look at the landmark Toonen versus Australia decision by the UN Human Rights Committee, speaking with the named Nicholas Toonen and the impact of sodomy laws. Welcome to Rainbow Crusaders. Archivist Robert French wrote in his book Camping by a Billabong that one of the first recorded executions for sodomy in Australian waters happened back in 1727 off the coast of Western Australia. On the 2nd of December of that year, the Dutch ship Zwijg held two sailors, Adriaan Spoor and Pieter Engels, who were accused, tried and found guilty of sodomy. The punishment, death by starvation, exiled to two smaller islands without food or water. In the long period that sodomy was punishable by death, the colony of Van Diemen's Land, which became Tasmania, held the highest record of executions for the crime of sodomy, executing the last man in Australian history for buggery, Dennis Collins, in Launceston. Moving back to the 20th century, Tasmania held to their old laws more vociferously than any of the other states. It was the activism of a small group of university students who sparked the discussion, and Nicholas Toonen being one of its members. He spoke about the initial meeting of what was to become the Gay University Students of Tasmania organisation.
In 1988, a group of gay men in Hobart who knew each other and had been involved in some of the social groups got together for a discussion night around the law in Tasmania, which is the first I'd really heard about the fact in detail about the facts of the law that made all sex between men illegal. And we decided, there were about 10 or 12 of us, and we decided that someone should do something about it and thought that if anyone was going to, it was going to be us. So a very low-key campaign started initially, which between 88 and 91, so for several years, grew and became more high-profile. And there were a couple of attempts in the Parliament to change the law, which failed. And we, at that point, were looking for other ways to put pressure on the Tasmanian government and Parliament to change the law. And the option of going to the UN came up at that point.
The instigation for the formation of Gusto was a talk given by Green's Bob Brown in a talk called Gay Politics and the Law. What followed turned what was a small group of students into a global discussion on international law and also turned Nicholas Toonen and Rodney Croom into household names in the gay community. Nicholas described what life was like back in the late 80s and his reality as a young gay man isolated in Tasmania.
I grew up very isolated around sexuality. There was nothing on TV. It was hard to access any information at all around what it meant to be attracted to other males. And sort of came out at the age of 22 with having experienced a great deal of isolation around my sexuality.
Late 80s Tasmania was marked with the high amount of anti-gay feeling. At the Third National Conference of AIDS in 1988, the remarks by opposition health spokesman Wilson Tuckey that AIDS is very much a disease that results from deliberate and possibly unnatural activities, end quote, fueled the ongoing stigma of people living with HIV and AIDS, and at the time was generally associated with men who had sex with men.
I was living in Hobart. There was a small but dynamic gay community, but the general atmosphere was pretty oppressive in that the laws in particular inhibited any positive approach towards gay issues from government or schools or any of the institutions that I came in contact with.
Next year, in 1989, the Ulverston local councillors debating a request from the AIDS Council for access to rooms expressed disgust at what was quoted and later revealed by activist Norrie May Welby as the arrogant, flagrant types who flaunt the homosexuality with no shame, and even more frighteningly, declared safe sex education was about trying to recruit new people to replace the ones they, being homosexuals, were losing through death from AIDS. This was just under 30 years ago. So when Gusto started a campaign, it chose to engage with the general populace, educate, and above all, not refuse to give in to pressure or compromise. The first major event which drew national coverage was what Graham Willett called in his book Living Out Loud, the apt title of the Battle of Salamanca. Salamanca Market was a Saturday morning craft market that had become the focus of Hobart's political and cultural life. Next to the Wilderness Society and the far-left group Resistance, the rebranded Gusto, now the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group, set up a stall, and for a month it seemed their presence was not going to be met by strong opposition from the community or council. However, after a month of distributing leaflets, collecting signatures for petitions and debating passers-by, the council considered the group's presence to be, quote, offensive and political. The threat was further met with persistence by arrests. Shaken but not defeated, the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group continued to campaign until October 22, when the police arrived. In the 5 weeks since then, there were 130 arrests, more than the legendary 1978 Mardi Gras arrests. And it wasn't just the group members. Observers were arrested, journalists were arrested, and the general consensus was that if anyone left the house on Saturday morning who was affiliated with the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group, they would also be carted away. As you can imagine, there was uproar. The membership soared from 30 to 200. Interstate gay and lesbian travellers joined the fight and started picketing outside the Tasmanian Tourist Bureau in all other states. But as more supporters started rising, the opposition to the reform was growing more vitriolic. The ALP Greens Alliance was starting to feel the burn of the Liberal opposition, whose presence at many anti-gay events was being met with popularity. Although it seemed all was lost in political circles, pro-gay support was rising in the masses. The Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Gay Law Reform was keen to educate and even participate in anti-gay meetings to argue their case, strengthen their willingness to fight on. It was the commitment to their cause that when a law reform bill was broached in late 1989 by the ALP Green State Government that linked decriminalisation to HIV/AIDS strategy, the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group stood that this was not a matter of health, but of justice, and a year later publicly opposed the bill. And in 1991, it failed in the upper house. The following year, 1992, saw the arrival of the Liberal government, what to many at the time saw as a nail in the coffin of gay law reform. But little was it known that the first piece of sexuality reform to the UN and in the world was to be broached, and the leaders Nicholas Toonen and Rodney Croom were prepared to go to all lengths to ensure their success. You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9 with Patrick Whalen-Smith. The battle for homosexual law reform in Tasmania was possible through what became an innovative strategy of appealing to the United Nations once all domestic avenues had been exhausted by the federal Labor government. On the first day of submittal, Christmas Day, 1991, Nicholas placed his name on the bill and became the first Australian complaint and the first based on sexuality. Although later being thankful, human rights activist and High Court judge Michael Kirby thought it would be an unsuccessful move.
I think his view was that it was very unlikely to succeed, and so it was a bit of a waste of time. And we felt, and Rodney Crim in particular, who was the driver behind some of the strategies that we used, such as the UN, going to the UN, we felt that it was worth trying. And some of the other legal advice we got, or some of the specific legal advice we got, said that it was worth a try, so we went ahead.
A few years later came a fax detailing that the UN had accepted and declared that Tasmania's laws breached international standards on human rights. But as they were soon to learn, that the UN had little pushing power in changing the laws.
The Liberal government, over the period of the 9 years it took to get the law changed, generally opposed the law changing, and so they opposed the case to the UN, and they were opposed to the decision that the UN committee took. So it was an interesting dynamic, because with the UN decision and the whole process of that, we had the federal government saying, yeah, this seems like a breach of human rights, and the state government saying, we don't think it is. So there were some interesting dynamics in that too.
The big opposition by the Liberal government was supported by what was to be a wave of anti-gay movement. Organisations such as HALO, Homophobic Activists Liberation Organisation, and TasAlert leafleted and campaigned, but each step of the way was followed by the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group. The huge response from the Liberal government was met with outrage from the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian... the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group, and it was in no way representative of healthy discussions regarding sexual practice.
Morality, health and HIV, and more broadly, what's the UN got to do with what happens in Tasmania, stay out of our business. I mean, it was all about homophobia, really, and fear and discrimination, and so all of the stuff about health and contributing to the spread of HIV rather than reducing the risk, and morality were all just smoke screens, really, for basically very conservative and homophobic positions.
National support for the law reform joined in wonderfully through boycotting Tasmanian produce, although not in any way a significant economic loss, but a publicity stunt that was joined by businesses as well as individuals on the Australian mainland. Another notable publicity stunt was the activists, including Toonan, openly branding themselves sodomites in front of police stations, daring to be arrested. Although the bait wasn't taken, the message was clear. After Tasmania failed to act on the UN's decision, the federal government rapidly passed the Human Rights Sexual Conduct Bill, which, although meant that the Tasmanian law stood, no one could be convicted of a consensual sexual act. These laws did make it difficult for Nicholas Toonan in his role with the Tasmanian AIDS Council, and eventually through state government pressure, unable to distribute safe sex education material, and gay men from visiting partners in hospital. The Tasmanian government made an ultimatum. Either Toonan resigns or the AIDS Council loses funding.
It was complex, but that's what it boiled down to, yes. I mean, I was working for the AIDS Council, and I was involved through the UN case in particular, in quite a high-profile way, in the Gay Law Reform campaign. And it really, I mean, in Tasmania at the time, it was quite hard to distinguish between the two, because the law was such an inhibitor around HIV prevention, an open discussion around HIV, as well as any open discussion around gay issues. It was hard to separate the issues, but the state government did say, well, we don't think we'd like to keep funding you if you keep employing this person.
One last fight for the rights came in a high court case, this time with Croom taking the stage. By this point, it became clear that the state government, that the game was up and they couldn't refuse the law reform any longer. But after passing the lower house, the upper house amended the law, desperately trying to hold on to power against public opinion. Three amendments: age of consent being 16 instead of 18, ban on promotion and encouragement of homosexuality, and a homophobic preamble. Each one failed. Finally, on the night of May 1st, 1997, when many of the Conservative members of the Legislative Council were away, the bill passed by one vote.
When the legislation went through the lower house of the Tasmanian Parliament with essentially a conscience vote from the Liberal Party, it was a Greens bill, conscience vote from the Liberal Party, support from the Labor Party, that meant it passed reasonably comfortably through the lower house, if I remember correctly. And the upper house, I think that is correct, in the upper house it would probably only have been a majority of one.
The battle was won, and since then, Tasmania has become a leader in supporting gay and lesbian rights, with Premier Lara Giddings introducing legislation to recognise same-sex marriage in 2012. Although defeated in the upper house, it was the first of similar moves within several parliaments. For Nicholas, it was a hard-won battle, and for all involved, truly meant.
When the legislation went through the lower house, ensuring that no other young people had to go through what we went through, or to the same extent anyway, in terms of the isolation and the lack of any connection at a younger age around being gay.
You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Rainbow Crusaders on Joy 94.9. We were just listening to a discussion of TuneIn versus Australia, and it is quite interesting to think that only about 20 years ago that there were still sodomy laws that existed inside Australia. Thank you so much for joining me this half hour. I would like to thank very much Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, Nicholas Toonan, and of course the work of Rodney Croom and Nicholas Toonan and everyone of the Tasmanian Gay Law Reform Group, who I kept stuffing up their name. Basically, this has been a huge event for that, and especially what was interesting, in his book, The End of the Homosexual, Dennis Altman, he wrote that this was one of the last significant pushes for law reform relating to people who are part of the same-sex and gender-diverse communities, quickly responding then, don't worry, the gay marriage people, I'm getting to you very shortly. And we will be talking about that later this season.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.